It's time for Twig This Week in Google. Jeff Jarvis is here, but so is Gina Trapani. The old gang's back together to talk about, of course, the Iowa election and which candidate uses social media the best. We'll also talk about Google's stunning, stellar results. They're now the most valuable company in the world. And lots of other stories. It's a great show ahead. Some good conversation on Twig. Stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 338, recorded Wednesday, February 3rd, 2016. 600613. This Week in Google is brought to you by Squarespace. Make your business and online store stand out with the only platform that lets you create, manage, and brand your store in a beautiful way. Enter the offer code TWIG and you'll get 10% off. Squarespace, you should. And by Gazelle, the online marketplace for buying and selling used gadgets. Shop from a variety of certified pre-owned electronics or trade one in for cash. Give new life to a used device. Visit gazelle.com today. And by FreshBooks, the super simple cloud accounting software that's giving thousands of freelancers and small businesses the tools to save time billing and get paid faster. Try it free at freshbooks.com/twig. Time for Twig This Week in Google, the show where we cover the latest in the Googleverse with the lovely and talented Jeff Jarvis back home where he belongs. But we will get back to CUNY's beautiful
pink
studio.
As ever.
Yeah. No, you know, you look good. You look good. You look great.
I have some sad.
Oh, no.
News.
News?
Bob of.
Yes.
Bob and Ray.
Oh, no.
Has passed.
Oh.
Away.
He's the Slow Talkers Club.
And I have the link up on the site to my favorite comedy routine ever.
Me
the
too.
Slow Talker.
Bob Elliott, Chris Elliott's dad. I think the younger generation knows Chris Elliott from Letterman.
I didn't mean to delay Gina's introduction here with my slow.
And that's my God, it's Gina Trapani as I live and breathe from Brooklyn, New York. Hi, Gina.
Hi.
Gina.
Hi. Good to see you both.
Are you?
The good news is that bit is on YouTube, so a whole new generation can discover it.
It is the greatest single.
Just, you know, once you listen to that, just go through all the rest of them, because Bob and Ray were
amazing.
I just
saw a trailer for, like, a new animated film where, like, they're all animals, and these two characters go into the DMV, which is staffed by Sloth.
Yes.
Yes. Did you see that?
Yes.
It's very funny, and I've seen it a couple times in the theater, and people laugh every time, even though it takes forever to go through the whole scene.
He's a slow-talking sloth.
It's the slow talker. It's a good...
That's right.
I didn't even put those two together.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I didn't either.
How are things going, Gina?
Great. It's a little cold here. It's raining today, though, and not snowing, so that's good.
You've had enough...
precipitation.
Enough warmth this summer that I think you could have some colts.
Yes.
Easy for you to say, California boy.
It's cold here. It's like 47 degrees.
Oh,
it's freezing.
Blah, blah, blah.
I'm wearing a sweater.
It's actually 57 here, Gina.
Yeah. It's actually warmer in Jersey.
It is.
Right
yeah.
Now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And MakerBase going well, MakerBase.co.
Yeah, things are good. Things are good. Go sign up if you haven't already.
And of course, ThinkUp is still the thing.
Mm-hmm.
ThinkUp.com. Get your free trial right now. And I'm leolaporte.thinkup.com. I think you can see my stuff. It's public, right?
Yes, it is.
I've been using Twitter a lot more lately.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I don't know why.
That's funny. I was just talking to somebody who said they're using Twitter less.
I've been using Twitter less. But I go through phases.
I go through phases. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'm feeling talkative and sometimes not so much.
Yeah. Yeah. And sometimes I'm very
enjoying
conversational.
Facebook more.
I like Facebook, true. And that, but I go through the same ups and downs with Facebook.
Yeah.
Well, you know, so the other day I was reading Facebook and I realized, boy, I'm just reading a lot of the Washington Post now. Their strategy of putting things up on instant articles is working.
I agree. And Al Jazeera Plus. You told me about AJ Plus.
Yeah, AJ Plus is
I agree. I think it is a great way. And look what you did. You already are on there with... I see more Jeff Jarvis in my Facebook feed than I do almost anything else.
Sorry.
But when I see something like this happen, you know, Bob Elliott passing, Facebook and Twitter are the places where the conversation happens, aren't they?
Yeah.
And that's so much better than reading a New York Times obituary, you know, and saying, hey, honey, you know what? I like that we can kind of have that dialogue. It seems like a healthy
And the tribute, community. You know, the people are sharing their favorite Bob and Ray routines, which is the best way to remember, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. It's nice when there's, and again, thanks to YouTube. Otherwise, what would you do?
We can hear them.
We can relive the memories.
For somebody who talks as fast as I do, that really drives people crazy when I try to talk that slow because it just isn't me. You know what? This is the normal me.
What do you think? What do you guys think? You know, this is not the first presidential election with the benefit of Twitter and Facebook. We had it 4 years ago. We didn't really have them 8 years ago, but we had them 4 years ago. I mean, we did technically have Twitter and Facebook, but I don't think they were as widely used. What do you think? And each time we have a quadrennial event like this, there really is a big shift over 4 years. The role of Facebook and Twitter will be this election year. Gina?
I mean, bigger than ever. I mean, I think the role is as big as it is in people's lives. And these services have become, I think, embedded in more people's lives than anywhere else. I mean, oh God, I'm not looking forward to the Facebook political debates between the various branches of my family.
I know. I mentioned this before, but what I did is I followed all the candidates, even Trump and I'm a Democrat, but even the Republican candidates, because I wanted to add that content to my feed.
Yeah. Yeah. See what they're doing.
I liked them.
I already find myself kind of covering my eyes when I see certain hashtags trending or whatever on Twitter, because I'm like, I just can't. I'm not ready for this.
I'm trying to force myself to get at to... if there is such a thing as a filter bubble, and I know, Jeff Jarvis, you argue against that notion that it's self-reinforcing. We see more of what we believe and less of what we don't believe. But if it is, to the degree that's real, I try to consciously add opposing viewpoints. And I know, Gina, it's hard. Sometimes you get, like, angry. But yeah. I'm trying not to be.
That's good. Good for you.
I'm trying to be the new thing, and it comes from this triangulation we did with a guy named Jonathan Haidt. He's a moral philosopher, moral psychologist. He's a professor of psychology at NYU who studies morality. And his book, The Righteous Mind, it was a really good subject. But he said, what we lack now is something he called intellectual humility, the idea that maybe we're not right about everything, and openness to other people's ideas. And I'm trying as best I can to be intellectually humble.
I love that scene in Inside Out, the Pixar film Inside Out, where they're on the train of thought and the box falls over and all the stuff tumbles out. And Joy says, oh, these facts and opinions, they just all look the same. And Bing Bong says, oh, don't worry, that always happens. And they kind of just stuff it back in the box.
Oh, that's so good.
These facts and opinions, they all look the same. Look the same. And they didn't bother to sort them back out again, right?
Oh, so, isn't that wonderful?
There definitely is. I love that. I love that phrase, intellectual humility.
Yeah,
people get really, especially around political issues, just get so passionate, right? And you tend to, you know, just become full of self-righteousness about your opinion.
Jeff, is social media going to give us an opportunity to do a better job this year of electing a candidate?
No, I'm afraid. And I'm always the optimist, you know. You know, the title of Joe Trippi's book, The Revolution Will Not Be Televised. Who would imagine that the revolution will be tweeted? And who would imagine that that tweet would not be Occupy Wall Street or Black Lives Matter, that it would be Donald Trump, who has used social media absolutely brilliantly. I wrote a post the other day on Medium arguing that the primary system is fundamentally racist because the two first states are 94 and 91% white, respectively. It's the angry white people. It's Petticoat Junction in a bad mood. and so what we see there is constituents who are left out of that process. And yeah, they may be able to talk on Twitter, but I don't think we see them much. I just put up under the bottom of other, I just put up a very good post from Alyssa Miller, who is the CEO of Public Radio International, PRI, who goes through the numbers on the candidates and their tweets and their social status. And she said the only two candidates seeing accelerating growth in social media followers since September are Donald Trump and Ted Cruz.
And they're the front runners in the Republican Party.
Right. The only one candidate has seen more than 50% growth in the rate of followers in that time, Bernie Sanders, which is up a whopping 80%, though I suspect his was very low before. She says that Sanders' overall growth rate is phenomenal. It started from a low rate. The rapid decline of Ben Carson is clear. So you do see a reflection here. Cruz has a slight lead on Rubio in social followers, so that's, you know, tracking to where Iowa was starting to go. Hillary Clinton, who is my candidate, full disclosure, has seen a lot of growth. But the bottom line is that I think that we're not seeing the people kind of taking over. We're seeing people with media power like Trump using that power, carrying that media power over to Twitter.
I am going to offer a somewhat different viewpoint, because I'll tell you what's in. I mean, I agree with you that his media power is sort of, you know, because of his many years on reality TV,
yeah,
is certainly a big asset for him. But there's another thing that I notice. Of all of the candidates who tweet, he's the only one who actually does his own tweeting.
Yeah, I think that's true.
There's something to be said for that.
Yes, there is. Absolutely.
And in fact, I think that's. It meshes perfectly with his appeal, which is he's seen as a guy who speaks his own mind, who is unfiltered, unmoderated. And if you look at Hillary Clinton's Twitter feed, you couldn't imagine a more moderated, yes, filtered feed. It's like campaign soundbite after campaign soundbite.
Well, eight years ago, we talked about the YouTube election, and the candidates all made YouTube videos there. And in the UK, at the same time, Cameron was making YouTube videos, and they were intimate. I've always said that someone's going to click on your nose, and you're going to talk to them one-on-one. But that's gone away, too. So, yeah, it's just another way to get messages out. And for Trump, he has no message. He just has, you know, his bombast. And his
You're stupid. You're... What did he? He had a tweet which he deleted, and this is I'm not kidding. This is to a great degree his appeal. He tweeted that the Iowa caucus was illegally, the vote was illegally stolen by Ted Cruz, and then he a minute or two later I can see the scene, running into his office saying. That is, you can be sued now, because that's libel.
Right.
And Trump said, it's amazing they were able to get him to delete it. But he deleted it and took the word illegally out. But he still said, he still tweeted, the vote was stolen. And that's part of his charm, that he says, these devil may care. He says what he thinks.
So
even if you disagree with what he thinks. He says what he thinks, and nobody does.
It's a continuation of the reality show, right? I mean, he has a savviness around these tools, right? Because, he's been a media figure, and people watch because they just want to see what he's going to say next, because they know it's going to be outrageous.
And, of course, he learned that from the World Wrestling Federation, where he was very much involved in wrestling. Somebody pointed this out, and it's really true. It's very much like wrestling. But I also think... that's why he didn't get the votes he thought he would get. That's why he polled so much better than the actual of the votes. Because people say, I like Trump, but when they actually comes down to voting, at least some percentage, enough to switch the result, thought better of it and said, well...
Leo, I think it all went back up in its own way. I just put a link up to an NBC story.
Yeah.
And I quote a Donald Trump tweet. Based on the fraud committed by Senator Ted Cruz during the Iowa caucus, either a new election should take place or Cruz results nullified.
There is a sore loser writ large.
He doubles down. Anything he says, he doubles down. And unfortunately, that strategy is working extremely well, obviously.
Very interesting.
He's really kind of, he's amazing to watch.
Yeah.
You know, as an orator, as a tweeter, as just a character, it's fascinating to watch. Because he is so popular.
The state of Iowa should disqualify Ted Cruz from the most recent election on the basis that he cheated. A total fraud. Wow. Based on the fraud committed by Ted Cruz during the Iowa caucus, either a new election should take place or Cruz results nullified. Oh, because he lied? This is the illegal, the fraud? Okay. wow, it is fascinating to watch. Too bad it's that such great stakes are involved, because it'd be great just to, if it were just a, you know, wrestling.
You know, the other thing that struck me, too, is I wrote this post about the angry white primaries. You know, okay, so I'm saying what I'm saying. Yes, I'm a liberal. And the personal attacks that then immediately, of course, follow. You know, somebody writes a really long response on Medium. You know, I can't stand people like you. Somebody calls me a douche on Twitter.
But you know what? You take that stuff so personally. I've learned to just...
But what I'm saying is, I don't think that was the case in debate before. You might say it about someone, but now you go to before the whole world.
Because it's ultimately democratic. And so you have 50,000 followers. Four of them are going to call you names for not agreeing with them. I think that's one of the things that is interesting about Twitter is it does give much more weight to the strong voices in the crowd, you know, the squeaky wheels, but at least everybody gets a voice.
My favorite is, Mr. Jarvis, your Huffington Post article show how much of a far-left radical socialist you really are.
Well, so what, though? I mean, you're not going to take... Good Lord, I just mute people.
I'm not a socialist. I'm a Hillary voter.
Yeah, that's true. If you were a socialist, you'd know. What to do.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about Google's quarterly results here.
Wow.
Although, I think this is a great subject, and we're going to be doing this for the next 8 months, because or 9 months, because I really think this is going to be a social media election. And any candidate who wants to do well in...
One way or the other, yes, I think you're right.
Has to... Do and they're not doing a good job of using social media, and maybe not Twitter, because Twitter is a relatively narrow slice. But they've got
Facebook,
to use Facebook.
I think, is more interesting. Facebook. In Facebook, yeah. I'm seeing the people, and my son Jake is working for Hillary in New Hampshire right now, by the way, and he's putting up posts, and you see real people, and you see young people. They don't all vote for Bernie. They're with Hillary. I think it's also about the campaign people saying things, and Hillary's account then retweets that, and you get more of a human voice there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really...
It is interesting.
Fascinating.
Frightening, but interesting.
I guess a demagogue would be better able to use this because he or she could use it unscrupulously, perhaps.
That's exactly what's been happening.
Yeah.
And you are going to get in such trouble with whatever Leo even allows us to talk politics, let alone says things yourself. Your audience goes berserk.
I didn't name names. I just said a demagogue. I didn't say who the demagogues are. In fact, I wasn't thinking of anybody specifically. I was just thinking that is one thing that does change is, you know, I mean, Joseph Goebbels was a brilliant propagandist and instrumental to the success of Adolf Hitler because he knew how to use mass media. And it was wasn't he... like one of the first people to really use mass media effectively?
Yes, and I think that's the important point, Leo, is that I argue that the mass media business model has died.
Yeah.
Thus,
so what's
the
next?
Concept of the mass dies. And what we really see is a mess of mobs. And the gross numbers for Donald Trump are not that huge, right? The percentage of people who are actually going to vote in this party in these states is not that gigantic overall. As Nate Silver has been saying, when it was a little bit lower, it was the same number of people who believe we didn't land on the moon or some such thing, right? So the gross numbers are not big, but there's a sufficient mob, and I use that pejorative term in this case, to you know, get him up. And same for Cruz. Now, will I call Bernie Sanders people a mob? No, but they behave in a way that it's a small but passionate group of people. And part of me loves that. Part of me loves that you can have...
The mob are the people who disagree with you. The passionate, small passionate group of people are people you agree with.
Well, yeah, but even the fact that anyone can find a community and join with that community and take action, that's the part of the internet.
It leverages our strengths. I agree.
But as it fits into a system that is built for two parties, we are seeing the old institutions being replaced by new structures, and we don't know what to do with it. So when you only have two parties, and you can fight over that party in a primary system, and you can go even farther, Trump is showing you can go to the extremes in this system now, in this point in the election. And there is no party institutional structure to stop that. They don't know what to do. So the things that I celebrate and like about the ability to find communities and join together and act can also be used by, you know, demagogues. And that's what we're seeing. Gina, you actually analyze Twitter all the time. Can you do a think up on Trump's account?
Crump.
Well, ThinkUp is really set up to do for folks who auth in so we can get access to their tweets. But I mean, Trump, all the candidates' tweets are public. So we probably should do an analysis over time. We should. You know, it's hard. Like, I look at follower numbers. It's so easy to pump up your follower numbers. And it really matters more. Like, who, you know, are these people interacting? Are they getting retweeted? How many people are seeing their, you know, how many eggs are actually responding to them? Like, because these folks get, we did some tracking the State of the Union a couple of years ago, and there's just so much spam and so much garbage. I think ThinkUp could do some really interesting stuff with pruning out that stuff. But this Medium piece where the author's comparing the follower count numbers, I don't think that's valid. I don't know if that's really indicative of anything really that important.
You know what I'm looking at that I think is really interesting? I'm just looking at how well the candidates understand and use the Medium. And for instance, we were talking about how AJ Plus puts captions on their Facebook video because people aren't actually listening, scanning their feed with sound on. So the autoplay video will start. So they put captions. So in effect, you're reading it. And I noticed, for instance, Hillary Clinton's campaign videos now on Facebook have AJ Plus style captions. Donald Trump's do not. And it's that kind of savviness, I would propose, it's going to make a difference. That's the kind of thing I'm talking about, how a candidate understands the Medium and uses it. Clinton's doing Snapchats. And I bet that's very effective if you're trying to get a younger audience, right?
Yeah, and if Clinton is targeting women, she's got to be on Pinterest. She's got to be on Instagram.
Interesting.
Instagram is actually a terrible content marketing tool. You can't even link in the captions, right? But people spend a lot of time on Instagram. I actually have been spending a lot of time on Instagram.
Is she have a presence on Instagram? I haven't noticed.
That's a good question. I'm not sure. Yeah. I'm going to look right now.
That is the metric I'm most interested in. Twitter is I think Twitter is really not a mainstream yet. And probably won't ever.
I think I was talking to somebody today who really, really knows Twitter, and he was arguing that Twitter is an elite.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
That's what's dominating Twitter.
Yeah, right? It's not elite in the way we normally interpret elite. Kanye's an elite. It's a slice.
Yeah, it's media people talking to media people.
Clinton is on Instagram.
Of course she
and
is.
Her bio is doting grandmother.
Yep. Same thing on Twitter. Yep.
Yeah, that's great. Oh, same on Twitter. Okay, yeah, so they've got it across.
Well, I think she says mom, grandmother. Mm-hmm. They're smart.
Among other things.
They're smart.
Yep.
And you know what? Maybe it isn't the candidate. Somebody says in the chat room, well, come on, it's not Hillary Clinton. It's her team. Of course not. Candidate. I mean, look, these people aren't tech, and we don't expect them to be geeks. We expect them, though, to be smart enough to hire the right minds. And because that is a reasonable expectation for somebody who will run the country, that they can find and hire the right people.
Absolutely.
Right? That's maybe more important than whether they tweet.
Yep.
To be honest. All right. Let's take a look at Google's results, because they are now, ladies and gentlemen, in a completely meaningless, speaking of meaningless horse races, in a completely meaningless horse race, the most valuable company in the world, eclipsing Apple, public company.
Alphabet.
Although Jason Calacanis pointed out on Twitter on Sunday that Vladimir Putin really is the most valuable company in the world, but we just don't know the numbers. Alphabet, right, not Google. One thing that's good, though, about the new Alphabet structure is we, I think, know more about how Google did than we would have before. There's more information, right? More broken out.
Yeah, they broke it out. There's Google's earnings, and then there's other bets.
Mm-hmm.
Which I hadn't even made the... I thought that was funny that the other bets, because Alphabet.
Other bets saw a $3.6 billion operating loss. Just half a million in revenue.
Sense. Right? I mean, that's no big surprise. Of course, this is the non-Google companies are losing money. They're designed to lose money. They're long-term moonshot
investments.
Things. Yeah, they're investments, exactly. And Google's doing way well enough to cover all that. So no one was surprised by that. And I didn't look deep into the report, but it sounds like other bets is just what they're calling everything else. So we actually don't really know.
Oh, they didn't say like our you know, autonomous vehicle is losing this. They didn't break it out that way.
Right.
That'd be pretty meaningless, actually.
Yeah.
I think.
Google had a profitable, very profitable quarter. Is there anything we can glean from this? Let me look at it. Mobile. Was mobile revenue good? They got $21.33 billion in revenue. And all but half a billion of that from the Goog. And as you can see, quarterly revenue up, 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 up. Well, you can see if you're watching video, this is the highest it's ever been. And stock price graph looks surprisingly similar to that.
This is a moment of my Apple fan friends who are always like, they would always say, but like Apple makes more money, right? And now I can finally say.
Yeah, but Google's worth more.
Right.
18% increase in revenue year over year. Income up 25. I'm sorry, the operating margin is 25%, up a mere point. They mix up GAAP and non-GAAP, so that makes it very complicated to summarize this. What I'm really curious, they don't really break it down into mobile and stuff like that.
Which Facebook basically does.
Yeah, and we know Facebook's done very well in mobile.
Yeah, but I think it's a deserved, even though you're right, it's a fairly meaningless crown. I think it's a very well-deserved crown because Google is changing the world more than Apple is. I think, and has an impact, and it's recognized for the value that it brings to people.
Advertising revenue up 17%. I wish they broke it down to mobile and desktop, but they don't.
Yeah, I do too.
Okay. Aggregate paid clicks on Google websites, paid clicks on Google. It's complicated. We were talking about this on Windows Weekly, about what a company reveals and what it decides to hide. What they're required to reveal and what the shareholders demand of them and how they bury the stuff they don't want anybody to know about. I'm not sufficiently sophisticated to look at the numbers and know. But the question you posed, Jeff, on your Medium post, is Google too big to love? We do like the plucky upstart.
Right, and now that it's the biggest company in the world, the most valuable company in the world, my fear is that the target on itself gets even bigger and more neon bright, especially in Europe, where you can just hear the people. Well, they're the biggest company in the world, and they're doing this. The biggest company in the world, they're doing that. They're just too big, and so what does Google do about that? And, I've chronicled on this show quite a bit how I think they are making moves, good and important moves toward publishers, which leads to AMP, whether that's a fork or not, we leave to last week, and other things that are good. And they are trying to build new relations with publishers, and I think that's great. I remain disappointed it's primarily aimed at Europe, which means it's primarily a lobbying effort more than a product effort, but we're seeing progress there. There's plenty of other industries that are equally scared of Google: automotive, health, travel.
There's different ways to be scared. So they're scared like these guys are doing such a great job, they're going to put us out of business. And they're scared like these guys are such a behemoth that their monopoly is going to crush us.
Well, obviously, even if it's the first fright, you're going to claim the second fright,
right,
no matter what.
Right. Because I don't think a lot of the fear of Google is they're not Microsoft. They're not engulf and devour.
Well, but here's what made me think about the parallel, though, is that Microsoft in 1988 was the largest company in the world, and the EU went after them, and huge issues around Microsoft. What was one of the things that Microsoft did to make itself less like cold software and more human.
I know, because I read the piece. They hired Scoble.
Yeah. And you got to give old Scobalizer credit for humanizing Microsoft. And so part of my point is that...
Not just Scoble, by the way, but blogs in general. They had a lot of... they suddenly spoke authentically.
So I suspect this will go over like a ton of lead balloons, but who is the Scoble of Google? Matt Cutts.
Ah, you're right.
And they trust Matt Cutts to speak and to be human and well-liked.
Is that still true even with Matt on leave?
Well, yeah, he seems to. He comes on and he talks about Google and nobody's saying, hey, shut up, you don't know crap.
Right.
You never hear that. People respect Matt. What I'm arguing is that in addition to having the kind of relations that Google needs to have directly with industries around the world before they get all pissed off and use all their political clout to fight Google, Google also needs to be more human, and it needs to be more open. And the paradox here is that Google is more scared of us than we are of it when it comes to opening up and being public. They can't afford to be the silent giant anymore. They can't afford to be the giant black box that runs the world. They have to open up, and one way to do that is to enable their smart, generous, amazing employees to speak more, to talk more.
Yeah.
And I think Matt is a great model for that. And not everybody can do it. I grant that. But I think that Google has to be very aware that its position as the most valuable company in the world, the largest company in the world, the fastest growing company in history, puts them in a position where they are going to get now even worse attention than they did before. And they have to act on that.
Well, there's another side effect of becoming big, successful, and that is people start leaving. We'll talk about that in just a second. We're talking about, it's called This Week in Google, but we're really talking about, what, the internet?
Anything we damn well want.
Anything we damn well want to.
And try Journalism. To stop us. I tell you, just try.
People were complaining that we were getting political, but I don't think that was about policies. If we got political, we'd talk about various policy measures and who's doing what and why you support one candidate or another. What I was interested in is how the candidates are using modern technology to change
story, Leo. I like this story. Good try not to get.
Hey, did you gather from what we just talked about who I'm supporting?
Not Trump.
I didn't call him a demagogue. You thought I called him a demagogue.
All right.
You called Bernie Sanders a demagogue, Leo? I'm sure
he's kind of demagogic. Bernie is a progressive demagogue.
Yeah. Yes,
he's telling the same story from the other side. And you know the supporters of Bernie are very much like Trump's supporters.
Yes, they are
demographically
very angry. They're
disenfranchised, angry. They feel like Wall Street is screwing them, and only Bernie can save them.
Yep.
It's what's very fascinating about when you get on either extreme, there's similarities.
Yes.
Somebody in the chat room says, I'm voting for Amazon's Echo for president. Damn straight. Finally, a president who will listen. Our show today, I'm so glad to have Gina here. Gina, I'm sorry. Out of force of habit, Jeff and I dominate now.
But no, it's okay.
It's kind of, Leo, the truth is it's always been that way. Oh. Poor Gina has always had to fight her way. Oh. And the fans like Gina best. We know it.
I know. We're just going to shut up.
No, I do stay away from for conversations about politics.
Why?
Partially because I'm not an expert.
Oh, but that's the beauty of this. You don't have to be. Everybody has an opinion.
I don't. I have zero opinion about politics. I'm just going to roll with that.
George Burns once said, it's a shame that the only people who know how to run this country are working in barbershops and taxi cabs. Gracie. Our show today brought to you by Squarespace. Oh, I love Square. I've become a Squarespace, born-again Squarespace fanatic. Always liked Squarespace. Was always impressed by the technology. But the more I use it, the more I love Squarespace. The place to create your next blog or website or portfolio or use their cover page feature. But did you know that Squarespace is great for commerce, too? They make it so easy to create a beautiful, professional online store. First of all, your store is available and looks great and works great on any size screen. That means whether it's a 4-inch mobile phone, you got to be prepared because I bet you Apple's going to sell a lot of 4-inch mobile phones come this spring. versus a 55-inch television. It'll look great on either size or all sizes because it's a responsive design, and their checkout on their commerce is mobile-optimized. You got to have that. I hate a site that says, well, you can't buy it on our website. Go to our mobile app. Or why don't you have our mobile app? You don't have to worry about it. You can sell unlimited products, no transaction fees. All your data, your financial information is protected with state-of-the-art, the latest, most modern technologies because these guys are geeks and they know what they're doing. That's why a Squarespace site never goes down. You can really trust Squarespace. And with that dashboard, you can manage your business's workflow, offer fast customer service. Yes, this is all built in. Process orders, send shipment notifications, handle refunds in seconds. They've even written an app. This is so cool. Not for your customers, for you. So you can, on iOS or Android, fulfill orders, the Squarespace Commerce app, manage product inventory. You can resolve customer issues on the go. Look, you've got to power your business with Squarespace Commerce, the only platform that lets you create, manage, and brand your store in a way that is beautiful, that reflects your style, that looks like it's yours, not some bland third-party separate shopping cart somewhere out there. They've got a basic plan that's very affordable, an advanced plan with features for your growing business. And, of course, as always, you get a free domain name with an annual purchase. This would be a great place to start a business. Your site will look like it's been designed by a pro because it has. It has. The best engineers, the best designers. And if you want to get geeky, you can play with it to your heart's content. And great support, too. I can go on and on, but look, try it right now for free. Squarespace.com. Just use the promo code TWIG. That way you'll let them know you listen. And you'll get 10% off. Squarespace. You should. You really should. How serious is this? Amit Singhal is retiring.
Why?
Why, Amit?
Why?
He's joining. I mean, you're seeing this across the board in the tech sector, and I think it's a sign of a mature industry. He's joining a number of other executives who decided, you know what? I have enough money now.
I've accomplished a hell of a lot.
Yeah, is that it? It's like 15 years, made a lot of money, like didn't spend a lot of time with my family. Time for me to go live my life now and let the youngins take over. Is that what this is about, you think? I feel so bad. I love this guy.
Yeah, everybody does.
He was their wizard of search, right?
But I think it's quite significant that the person who takes over is artificial intelligence, and they're merging the artificial intelligence and search divisions. That's extremely significant in my view. That says the future of search is understanding what you need before you need it.
John Giandrea is taking his place. Artificial intelligence used to be the whipping boy, right, Gina, for failed computer science theories.
Yes.
That'll never work.
Yeah.
When did it become the
fission.
Thing?
It's the fission of CS, eh?
It's, fusion. Not fission.
Fusion.
It's, we got fission. That's easy.
Yeah, that's true.
Unfortunately, it's the fusion that's hard. It's the kind of the pipe dream. And all of a sudden, now it's everywhere. Did we just have a breakthrough at some point?
Did we just lower expectations? Or
yeah, maybe that's it.
Or decide that the applications of it were smaller and modular? I mean, so give me...
I think we changed the definition is what we did.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, just machine learning. It's now machine learning.
We thought artificial intelligence was an attempt to make a computer think like humans. And everybody's kind of agreed that's a silly goal. But learning, you're right. Machines that get smarter, that do a better job. Would you call Google now artificial intelligence?
Well, yeah, I was just going to ask you that. So, like, give me an example of artificial intelligence that we use on a day-to-day basis. Is Google search artificial intelligence? Like, you could argue that it is. I mean, Google's crawlers and index is constantly learning and connecting concepts and has an idea of what concepts are, the knowledge graph and all that. Is that AI, like, the way that we conceived it years and years ago?
No. Self-driving cars?
Self-driving
cars.
You know what it is? It's a continuum. So search, when it was first constituted, was clearly a mechanical process. It was very obvious. You could see the gears working. But as computers have gotten faster, they're not getting smarter. That's a misnomer. but they're getting and they're better designed and they're more and they're accumulating knowledge. And we are doing better with taking the information, the big data that we've now gather all the time, and applying algorithms to it so it looks smarter. But I would submit it's the same gears. They're just turning faster with more information, right? Gina, you're a programmer. That's why I ask you.
Yeah, yeah. Lots more information. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, big data. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, look exactly. at ThinkUp. Right. Is ThinkUp artificial intelligence?
No, not at all. It's a bunch of algorithms, a bunch of rules, and a bunch of data. It's a bunch of rules applied to a bunch of data. So it's like you say, you know, if these patterns emerge in the data, then do this.
Although,
right? you do that over and over and over again.
It's no accident that you call it ThinkUp, is it?
Well,
hey, the URL was available.
No,
we needed a name.
No, but it might have been unconscious, but that's the implication. You're thinking about the data. This is the is that the machine learning, the weird landscapes? Yeah, these are the weird landscapes created. Jason just decided to freak me out.
That's cool. Oh wow,
this is art created from the neural network learning stuff. By the way, I don't think there's any evidence that neural networks have done. Although, I take it back, because it seems trivial. But and this is, of course, where AI first emerges in the most trivial uses. But now on iPhones and Android, somewhat, but mostly on iPhones, you see a slew of apps that recognize your face and modify it, like Snapchat's thing. And it's because of the improvement of facial recognition algorithms over time, thanks to neural networks applied to massive amounts of data.
Mm-hmm.
Well, plus biometric security, like Microsoft's. Hello.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's face recognition. Sure. Yeah.
That's a form.
Face recognition is not artificial intelligence. That's easy. How far apart your eyes are. It's measuring the face. It's not hard.
What about recognizing the same person from current age back to birth?
That's a little harder. The hardest still is to look at a ton of faces and pick and say and identify their names. That's not what's going on in biometrics. Biometrics is recording your face, matching what's presented to it to those measurements. That's easy, right? That's easy. That's not face recognition. Face recognition is naming all the people in a crowd. That's hard. Although it's kind of an application of the same algorithm, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Gina, you know better than I.
It's all about the data, for sure.
Data is the key, isn't it?
It's the rules plus the data. It's the algorithms plus the data. Yeah.
Are the algorithms better? The failed AI algorithms of... By the way, Marvin Minsky passed away this past week.
Yeah.
Speaking of AI. I wonder, you know, boy, I'm sad I didn't get to talk to him because he was the father of AI in many ways. And I would be very curious. He was a co-founder of MIT's AI lab. I'd be very curious what he thinks of modern AI, you know, whether he thinks is this AI the AI he was thinking of? Marvin Minsky invented the first head-mounted graphical display, Google Glass precursor.
It's his fault.
It's his fault. He developed Logo with Seymour Papert. In 1951, he built the first randomly wired neural network learning machine. Nice name, too. Snark. Snark. So it's kind of timely. We should have spent more time trying to get him on. But here he is. He just passed away, sad to say, January 24th. And I hope somebody interviewed him about the current state of...
somebody had to have, right?
AI, yeah. What he thought of it. Because that's not... I don't think it's his AI. I don't think it's the AI he envisioned. But I might be wrong.
The new head of search at Google... says that the business intelligence told Fortune recently that I think computers are remarkably dumb. The computer is like a 4-year-old child.
Right.
And so I, you know, I think that there's an arm of this world that says, you know, relax, those who fear it's going to take over the world. It's not going to take over the world. A good friend of mine today said, was amazed at the idea that, you know, God made us in his image and we're making a computer in our image. This is our effort to think that we can make something that's like us, but that may not be the most powerful thing there is. It's a machine.
So really, Gina, does this sound correct? It's not that the machines are so much more powerful. Of course they are. But it's more that the data, there's so much more data.
Yeah, I mean, a computer is like a four-year-old child. I feel like gives a computer a little too much credit because four-year-olds are actually
smart.
Really smart, but they don't have a lot of data because they haven't been alive for long enough.
Well said, Gina. Well said.
I mean, I don't mean to like, but I mean, I spend a lot of time around 3 and 4 year olds and they're super smart. You tell them one thing, they connect ideas very quickly, faster than I think than a computer, right? So, I mean, you know, but on the other hand, computers can calculate things. Computers are just better at certain things than humans are, but humans are certainly better at things that computers aren't. So that's interesting. So I would say the four-year-old isn't actually that dumb. Just lacks
short on data,
life experience. Yes.
Just see whether a computer can go potty.
In a way, it's big data and the ability to go through a lot of big data more than anything, more than intelligence that we're talking about here.
Yes, I think so.
Somebody mentioned this earlier today in the chat room, and I had looked it up. This was among the other things we learned about the NSA, although this is pre-Snowden, was a program called Optic Nerve, in which the British GCHQ was intercepting Yahoo webcam images in bulk. And the reason, this is between 2008 and 2010.
I can't make fun of the people who put the damn tape over their webcam anymore?
No, because what they were doing is collecting big data. They didn't care about those pictures. They weren't trying to find crooks in those pictures. They were trying to generate, oh, I guess this is Edward Snowden. All right, this is from Edward Snowden's trove of documents. They were trying to generate giant databases to improve image recognition. The program Optic Nerve saved one image every 5 minutes from millions of Yahoo chat users' feeds. They said they only got one image every 5 minutes, partly to comply with human rights legislation, but also to avoid overloading their servers. And this database, which I'm willing to bet is still in use, is really the beginning of this.
So it's just raw data. I mean, that's actually been a theory of mine for a long time about the warrantless wiretapping that was going on.
It's about the data.
It was about the data and about finding anomalies more than finding the crook. I don't know that, but I just have a feeling that was the effort.
One document in the cache of documents from the GCHQ, the British spy agency. Unfortunately, it would appear a surprising number of people use webcam conversations to show intimate parts of their body to the other person. Also, the fact that the Yahoo software allows more than one person to view a webcam stream without necessarily sending a reciprocal stream means it appears sometimes to be used for broadcasting pornography. Undesirable nudity was in 3 to 11% of the webcam harvest.
Well, how do they define desirable? I would generally define nudity as desirable. I don't know.
Well, but not that's what's wrong with spies.
Not for facial recognition.
They're making war, not love, Jeff.
too much flesh confuses the algorithm, right? Yeah.
It is possible to handle and display undesirable images. There is no perfect ability to sense a material which may be offensive, but users who may feel uncomfortable about such material are advised not to open them. Oh, ho, ho. Jolly good. Don't go in there. There's nudity ahead. All right. I'm sorry. I got sidetracked. John Giandrea. Giandrea. Nice Italian guy. New VP.
I think his background is very interesting.
Tell me about it.
Came from, he was a chief technologist at Netscape in 1999. So that was when the browser came out in 1994, Netscape. Yep. CTO of Telme.
Oh, they got him in the Telme acquisition.
Well, no, that was, it was then acquired by Microsoft in 2007.
Oh, that's right. Microsoft bought Telme,
He had a stint at General Magic.
Oh, yes. Oh, wow. Everybody, you know what? If you're going to find one source, one beginning, one Blue Nile source for all of the Silicon Valley, most interesting stuff of Silicon Valley is General Magic.
Well, and Stanford Research Institute.
And, of course, Park.
It's kind of the child of that.
SRI.
So Business Insider, on his LinkedIn profile, one of his colleagues describes it this way. There are three types of engineers: those who wanted to work for JG, those who wanted to work with JG, and those who wanted to be JG.
Mm-hmm.
He has far-reaching vision with the ability to go very deep very quickly. So I'm sorry we're losing Singhal, but it sounds like, of course, Google is putting somebody in charge who's
good.
Amazing.
Yeah. And an AI researcher.
Well, he also joined the company after Google bought his company, MetaWeb, which was the basis of Knowledge Graph.
Oh, wow. That's how he got
He's qualified.
Yeah. All right. We'll give him a pass.
We'll give him a few weeks.
Whatever. I'll give him a pass on the four-year-old comment.
I would guess, I'm not in the inner circle here, but I would guess that there are people within Silicon Valley are well-known because they've been to those places and are highly regarded. And they're the cards in the deck that you want to add to your collection. Interesting. Yeah, General Magic was created by Bill Atkinson, who was at Apple. He was the genius behind the Macintosh internal routines, the quick draw and the ROMs. And in fact, it was a bunch of Apple people that went over there. Folded in 2002. But boy, a lot of people got their start or worked there at some time, including Gianandrea. We're going to have to learn how to pronounce his name.
Yeah.
Gianandrea, I think, is probably how is how you probably say it. Binjon's probably illegal. What a surprise. I've been kind of critical of Binjon all along. This is T-Mobile's very popular with its customer plan, not to count against you video you watch on Netflix and other streaming services. YouTube is not part of Binjon, alas. And why wouldn't subscribers like it? But a new study from Stanford University says it violates net neutrality and is likely, in fact, because of that, illegal. Barbara Van Schwijk, the law professor who authored the study, said T-Mobile's Binjon is aptly named. It feels good in the short term, but harms consumers in the long run.
Gotta get a hangover, gotta gain some weight.
The program limits user choice, distorts competition, stifles innovation, and harms free speech on the internet. If more ISPs offered similar programs, these harms will only get worse. And this was always our criticism. It puts T-Mobile in a position to decide who wins and loses on the internet. For instance, Binjon supports Vivo TV for watching music videos, but doesn't make YouTube or Vimeo available. It supports Ustream. Fortunately, we use Ustream for live streaming video. But that's an interesting point. If you watch Twit, you're now incented to choose the Ustream feed instead of the BitGravity feed or the Twitch feed, and those companies are disadvantaged. Doesn't support Meerkat, doesn't support Periscope. And now T-Mobile says, anybody can sign up. It's easy. But the study also says technical requirements are more complicated than T-Mobile claims and that the carrier is tilting the playing field to the advantage of larger firms. Binjon allows some providers to join easily, creates lasting barriers for others, especially small players, non-commercial providers, and startups. And that's the problem right there. It rewards the incumbents, and it stifles innovation.
Yep.
Sorry, John Ledger. Sorry. Project Skybender. So we knew about Loon, the balloon project that Google was putting balloons up in the stratosphere to provide internet access wirelessly everywhere. Elon Musk mentioned that he wants to launch hundreds of low Earth orbit satellites to do the same thing. Facebook was playing with drones to do the same thing for internet.org. Now there's Project Skybender, Google's secretive 5G internet drone test. Appropriately enough, tested near Area 51. It's at New Mexico's Spaceport Authority, and it's using millimeter wave potentially 40 times faster than 4G.
As is the Aereo founder who started...
he's got a new one, right?
Starry. You've got 2 millimeter wave.
Yeah, Starry's commercial, though. Mm-hmm. And a number of people are wondering about that.
Yes.
Whether it's viable or not. Is he using drones? They're going to trial it in Boston this summer. Starry is a 1 gigabit internet service. You may remember Aereo. That was the crazy plan to have dime-sized antennas. Rupert Murdoch behind it. Dime-sized antennas that would allow you to watch TV, over-the-air TV, on your iPad from New York City, even if you weren't in New York City. The Supreme Court put them out of business after lawsuits from the networks who thought that was a very bad idea. So this is his new project.
Starry, you have to put an outside antenna.
Yeah, it's not the same antenna technology. The problem is millimeter wave is not known to go a long way, and because
that's the issue.
High frequency, it gets stymied by anything in the way, including rain. It's fast, though. There's the Starry Beam radio that you would... Oh, my God, it's like a cell tower. It's huge. You'd have to put that in your house. Okay. I hope we don't see a lot of those in the air. Anything else? Let's see. What else are you guys interested in? Don't let me dominate the conversation. Anything that piques your interest. How about...
podcasts in Google Play.
I was just looking at that one.
Yeah.
I really want to see Google like go crazy with podcasts. And Leo, I'm really interested to hear what you think.
We've known about this for some time. We were NDA'd. It turns out. So when Lisa signs an NDA, one of the things she makes sure not to do is tell me anything.
Because she's smart.
Yeah.
So wait, so you were NDA'd. Is the NDA up at this point?
Well, it is now because this has been published publicly everywhere. So.
Okay.
You know, that's one of the deals with NDAs is you can only reveal stuff that's commonly known. Mm-hmm. Since I know nothing, except that we have been working with them.
Why hasn't Google started a massive podcast directory? Why hasn't it done transcripts of every single podcast and made them searchable and linkable? Like this is kind of my biggest complaint about podcasts is just that it's hard to find, you know, certain places where people are talking about things. And right. I feel like this is a job that Google could do easily with the suite of tools they already have.
Well, it's kind of what they're doing, right? Isn't that? I mean, I guess you'd have to be a Play subscriber. As opposed to just a user of Google Search.
I spend lots of money on Play.
Yeah, I love Play. As a company love Play now. We're very happy about this. But we're on Spotify. Same. It's very similar. You know, all these guys are doing this because they're really afraid of being in the thrall of the music industry because they could pull the plug anytime. It's just like Netflix creating its own content. Audible's been talking to... podcasters and other content creators. I think they've hired some people from PBS.
Well, they hired some major content executives too.
Yeah.
NPR veteran.
Mm-hmm. That's it. NPR, not PBS.
Yet another podcast store or directory or place to subscribe. Like I want to see more stuff. I want when I'm listening to a podcast,
right,
I want the link that they're talking about.
Oh, yeah.
To come up and auto load. I want transcripts. I want the ability to annotate, to share. I want where I've listened up to sync across all my devices. I want to know what episodes I've listened to and for it to tell me automatically like what's next when I express.
I want a deep link into a podcast.
Yeah, deep link into a podcast. If when I express interest, I want the Google Now for like I was interested in Ronda Rousey. Like here are the top 5 episodes from all these different shows that like I should listen to or whatever. You know,
like a Now on Tap feature would be awesome.
Like a
right?
Now on Tap feature. Yeah, like this is a show I should listen to because this was the topic of the show or this is the thing that I think people make such good points. There are such great moments in so many different shows, but there's just so much out there. And I also think there's a lot of room for innovation in clients as well. I love Pocket Casts. They do a great job. I still find myself like this feeling like this could be so much easier. And it's interesting that Google hasn't you know, really tried yet. So I'm wondering, is this it? Or is this, I assume this is just like Google Play is going to list podcasts and you can subscribe to them there, just like music. And it would be similar to iTunes offering.
I think from this description, you're right. That's exactly what it is.
You know, you've just invented a company you should start.
We'll call it Odeo. Oh, no, wait a minute. Well, that worked out okay, though, right?
Well, we'll see where Twitter lands.
Yeah, maybe it's unknown. Odeo was Ev Williams' company before he pivoted dramatically into, and he did podcasts. Odeo was right about the same time as I was starting up in Twit. And I was we were on the Odeo directory, of course.
That's right.
So I don't have it yet. It's 6.3. I only have 6.2. So when you get your update, you can see. So I'm only basing this on what others have published online, because Lisa won't show me. But I guess our stuff will be there. I guess the reason that we are familiar with it is because they wanted us files and stuff for testing and so forth.
No doubt. They'll be there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We're everywhere you want to be.
You are profligate.
Profligate. That's a nice way to put it. Promiscuous would be another way. Yes. Well, we'll look for it. And, you should be getting the update pretty soon. It's rolling out slowly. You know, I've been waiting for this update on Hangouts, and I still haven't got it. I'm very nervous about what Google's going to do with Hangouts. They've apparently decided to move everybody to Messages, the messaging, you know, for SMS. I'm on Google Fi, too, which means I'd probably be forced to sooner than others, but I still don't have the new Hangouts.
Over the last week, I've noticed some drops in messages on my Hangouts.
Well, I tried to change my default to Messenger, as Google had recommended.
Yeah.
And all the texts continue to go to Hangouts, so I don't know what's wrong. It's going to be a bumpy ride, I think. This is probably preparatory to either phasing out Hangouts or constraining it to be what it was kind of originally, which is for video calls and Hangouts, right? And then making Messages more of a messaging platform to compete with Facebook Messenger and WhatsApp and, you know, Telegram and all that stuff. Our show today brought to you by Gazelle. I love Gazelle. And it's just in time for the slew of new phones and devices coming. Of course, Mobile World Congress is coming up. We're going to learn about the Galaxy S7 on February 21st. Yes, we'll broadcast that live. And, of course, you know what that means. As soon as the new one comes out, your old one starts losing value. So now, today, is the time to go to gazelle.com and get the quote for what your old device is worth and lock it in. They don't lock you in. You lock them in for 30 days. They promise you they will pay you at least that much for 30 days. Just go to gazelle.com, find your device, get an instant quote. Shipping is free. They'll send you a box. Payment is fast. And they buy all sorts of stuff. Now, here's the interesting thing. They also sell. So if you're looking to buy a certified pre-owned device, turns out, just kind of a side effect of their business, they have a good number of nice iPhones to choose from, including the iPhone 6S and the 6S Plus, iPads of all varieties, even Samsung Galaxy phones. Every device Gazelle sells is fully inspected. They're backed by a 30-day return policy. And, of course, even though they work on all the major carriers, they are sold without carrier contract. Gazelle.com. They're now providing financing, too, on all devices. This is a firm. You're probably familiar with this company. You just give them some very simple information. You get instantly approved, and you pay off in 3, 6, or 12 months. This is a nice way to do it. Easy monthly payments. They'll set it up that you can do it with check, but you can also use bank transfer, wireless transfers, or a debit card. Just select financing with a firm at checkout. They are now doing a 12-month warranty as well. So you have a 30-day return policy, but you can also buy a one-year warranty on cell phones and iPads. This is they're using Assurance Solutions that covers water damage, cracked screens. Wish I had this for my kids. Hardware defects and more. And now they've got 24/7 help, round-the-clock help to process claims and return your device fast. Don't miss out on getting the best value on certified pre-owned devices. Gazelle, they're just getting better and better and better all the time. And thanks to Gazelle, so are your devices. Gazelle, www.gina.com. We're talking about the internet, the Google, the Facebook. Gina Trapani, I know you only have a few more minutes, right?
Yeah, 6 p.m. I can go about, yeah, I can go about 10 more minutes.
Babysitter's going home?
Yeah, I got a dinner to get to.
Oh, good. That's better.
Going home. Yeah.
That's better. I like that better. Jeff Jarvis is also here from the City University of New York.
I got nothing to do. I got nowhere to go. Buzz I can machine. Be here all com. Night.
You and I just gas on and on.
Yeah.
I like this. Google's giving free gigabyte internet to public housing residents.
That is nice. It's having an impact on their cost, but it's the right thing to do.
Is it? I guess they'd have to wire it up and stuff. This is
it's expensive.
Here's a picture of the president with Eric Schmidt as part of this. Alphabet, during the call on Monday, Alphabet's CFO, it's so hard to get used to calling him Alphabet, told investors that even though it's expensive to put that fiber service in, they're working with the Obama Housing Department to set up public housing residents with gigabit connections free of charge. You know, that's a great way to get people jobs, to get them back in the world, to help kids learn. That's how you break the cycle of poverty, is just stuff like that. It makes a huge, huge difference.
So while T-Mobile is blocking internet access, Google, between their drones and their public housing projects, like, are trying to get more people online. And of course, this is in Google's interest as well. The more people are online, the more Google benefits.
Right.
But this is good. This is a win-win for everybody.
It's not the first time they've been in the White House. In January, they were there when the government announced a $4 billion budget for autonomous vehicles. So, you know, one hand washes the other. Mm-hmm. No, I think it's just I just think that's playing, fair. That's the way to do it. This one's a little weird. Apple, until recently, when you searched for abortion, was pointing you towards adoption sites. Apparently a bug, not intentionally. Google is pointing extremist searches towards anti-radicalization websites.
I think that may just be in the UK.
This is intentional in the UK. It's a pilot scheme. Facebook and Twitter and Google are under, the microscope because of widespread use by extremists to radicalize people and to organize and to even plan attacks. I like this. This is a pilot program. They want to make sure that counter-radicalization videos are more discoverable on YouTube and even offered when people search for things like, well, I don't even want to say, hummus. That's not true. I made that up. Not the story, just the word hummus. This is interesting from Jessica Lesson at The Information. I subscribed, so I was able to read it. Some of you may have seen synopses in other journals. In fact, did you like this? I got to go back. The link that you just used came from a private email sent to Business Insider and has already been used to view the full text of the article. If you are if you're a subscriber,
I clicked on it from the rundown. Yeah,
yeah. Please log in. So hide my login, because I, of course, pay the $400. I think I want to support these kinds of initiatives, and I think the information is fantastic. But does that mean I can't show the article? The video you're watching has been stolen from this article. It's Amir Afradi, who has great contacts inside Google. But this matches a little bit what I think Apple is doing with the iPhone as well. Google is no longer going to make it, you know, kind of the LG makes the phone or Huawei or HTC under strict guidance from Google. Apparently, these companies set up inside of Google when they're making the, you know, the Nexus 6 or the 6P, they set up inside Google. So it is kind of a very tight collaboration, but it's apparently going to go move, in fact, in the direction of Apple-style manufacture. Google, you know, designs and manufactures it with people like Foxconn, or maybe takes LG and Samsung and turns them into Foxconn-like partners. And so this is good.
How is that different than what they do now? They're just going to more tightly be involved with the hardware?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, I don't know. If you make the six, if Huawei makes a 6P, how much? I mean, at least Huawei's name is on it. You know, we know that it's a Huawei device. So that wouldn't be the case in future. Although it wouldn't be hard to find out. We know Foxconn, for instance, makes iPhones.
Right.
But it says Huawei right at the bottom of this 6P. I think that probably is to reassure people that, oh, well, it's a, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the way this, I imagine the way that this works is that these companies kind of pitch Google on various handset designs, and then Google chooses one and then works with them. And so the way that this new method would go is that Google actually just designs everything in-house.
I love that.
I mean, I always look to the Nexus line as like the definitive reference phone, Google's idea of like the ideal scenario for Android, right? And so I want the best that that Google can come out with. And I don't want to feel like, well, Huawei's, you know, not so great, or LG's, you know, whatever. I want it to be the definitive best up-to-date Android, you know, experience, hardware experience. So I love that.
It makes me a little sad about Motorola, because I'm sure one of the reasons Google divested Motorola is because they wanted to make sure that companies that were making Android wouldn't feel like they were competing, like, or Motorola had some special inside information. They were always extremely careful to do that. But if you're going to make your own phones, don't you wish you had Motorola back?
Well, and everything else that included?
Well, what? What else did it include that they didn't want?
Making all kinds of other phones. That's the problem. And for Motorola to be a viable business,
it had to make,
you had to make a large range of phones.
Yeah, okay.
If all you want to make is the reference,
and, all right, you're right. But still, that expertise.
Yeah, true. What does that do to Android partners? Do they get, you know, Google then is fully a competitor?
Right. Well, that's just, yes. Isn't that interesting? Yeah.
Yeah.
I want this mirror, Max Braun.
Yeah.
A Google engineer built a smart mirror. They had these on the cruise ship I was on. Except it's for the robot bartenders. It was like a one-way mirror device that would project information on the mirror about what drink was being made. But in his bathroom, it gives you weather and news and the time and date. Isn't that cool? A smart connected mirror. I would like to get the plans for this, Max.
He's got like an Amazon Fire Stick plugged in with an APK. Like he compiled an APK and then... And he bought the display. It's really cool, the project. Although I got to tell you, like, I have a smart mirror. It's my phone. It's not a mirror. it's like the home screen of my phone. Yeah, it's kind of like, do I really need a smart bathroom mirror? No, but it's pretty cool that he was able to achieve it.
I want one.
And my mirror fogs up every morning.
That's true. This would not be good if it fogged up.
No.
But I think this is an example of displays you might see all over the house, which are... It's kind of almost augmented reality on a display. So the display is doing what it does, but there's an overlay that gives you additional information.
Seeing news headlines all over my house would really stress me out. But the weather and time is great.
He does say you don't want to actually look inside because...
Yeah. Right, there are the plans right there.
I love it. Board from China that converts anything in the universe to a 40-pin display cable, only using it for HDMI. These wires seem excessive. Green LED glows green again with the wires. And what is this? I can't even. So I think this is Max's own annotation, but it's based on an Android TV Fire TV stick. That's cool. Amazon, I should say. That's really cool. I like this kind of stuff. Gina, I know we got to let you go. I hate to do it.
Sorry about that.
Do you want to give us a quick tip?
Let's do that. Oh, man, I can't believe I'm going back to politics. But if you search for a presidential candidate and you want to know how they stand on the various issues, you can Google has now incorporated this into their knowledge graph, right into the search results. So say if you search for Hillary Clinton issue stances, you will find out what all the things she said about immigration and guns and economics and healthcare. And you can do that for any presidential candidate. And you can also search by issue. So you can say Donald Trump, immigration, and you'd see what, you know, hit the various quotes, things that he said, his stances on the issues, civil liberties, foreign policy.
I'm glad taxes. They did this. I thought that this is helpful.
It's a really nice interface, pretty easy to read and click through. It's pretty great. I mean, it's just sound bites from various news articles, but very informative.
You mentioned Instagram. Are you following this new series? I haven't seen it yet that they're debuting. Instagram is debuting a original video series in 15-second clips.
I haven't seen it yet either.
Yeah, this is going to be cool. I have not seen it yet, but I'm going to enjoy it. I'm looking forward to it.
It follows.
I think Instagram is really cool. Like the short video format, I think is really, really interesting. I think this has a lot of potential.
28 episodes, total of 7 minutes because it's 15-minute clips.
Or 15 seconds.
I'm sorry, 15. I keep saying minutes because it seems like seconds is hardly enough.
Yeah.
How do you find it?
I guess you'd have to follow. It's called Shield 5. Let me just search and see if there's a Shield 5 account. Or maybe it's going to, you know what? I bet it's going to be in there where they put the ads. On Instagram, yeah. every 10 posts
there is
an
a
ad.
Shield 5 account.
Oh, all right.
Spelled out F-I-V-E.
I wonder if that's somebody opportunistically created that.
Hunt begins
Monday.
So it's
throughout February at 5 p.m.
Oh, okay. So it hasn't.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, where do I watch the first episode?
Oh, last Monday.
Oh. Yes,
oh, there it is.
It's Shield 5. It's spelled out. The 5 is spelled out.
Yeah, I see two. Oh, it is. Yeah, Shield 5, one word, 5 spelled out. Only 15,000 followers. A serialized thriller to be broadcast exclusively on Instagram. New episodes throughout February, 5 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time.
I'm watching it now.
Wow. Well, we could watch it on the... Well, let's watch it together while we let Gina go.
Sorry, I'm...
All right.
Thank you, Gina.
Thanks for having me.
Bye, Gina. Always good to see you.
Yeah, it's good to see you too.
Hey, I don't care if you want to come on for 5 minutes. You're always welcome.
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, thank you so much.
We'll shut up.
Yeah, next time we won't talk. We'll make you work.
And Jeff, we'll talk about. I'll definitely come into the new studio. I want to check it out.
That'd be great.
Cool.
Thank you, Gina. Have a great day. ThinkUp.com, MakerBase.co.
Yes,
Gina Trapani. See you later, Gina.
See you later.
Here it is, Shield 5. So should we start at the beginning? We should start at the beginning, right?
You can figure out which one is the beginning.
The first one. Here you go. You ready? Watch, everybody. London. A man walks down a street. Saturday. Oh, my gosh, he's bloodied. Was he shot? Things are getting blurry. And guess what? Your 15 seconds is up.
Over.
He does fall to the ground.
Okay, let's go to number two.
Episode one, John Swift. Oh, it looks like there might be nudity in this next one. No, just kidding. I doubt it very much. Chris came running over 8 days earlier. His wife's in bed, or some woman, a woman. Maybe his wife in bed.
I'll find out in half an hour.
He has a British accent. She's cuddling. Red covers and probably not wearing any clothing. That's it.
Oh, Jesus. Story interrupt us.
Do you think anyone's going to know? What do you think that means? We'll find out in a minute. In between, so it's kind of fun because it's a mystery. In between, you get clues. You see this police appeal for assistance, murder and armed robbery. Have you seen John Swift? Detectives are looking for him in connection with an armed robbery and murder. Now maybe we know why his shirt was bloodied, right? And then after this segment, we just saw staff directory. Oh, they work together. He's a driver. She's office manager. What else can we determine from this? He was born in 1919, and so was she. Or maybe they just cut off the other part of the year. Okay, next one. You ready? One more. I guess we've missed a lot of this. Here's episode 3 of Shield 5. The job. SVC security offices, Wapping, London.
You're in Shield 5.
Thanks.
Thought we were in 9.
I changed it to 5.
Is that a problem?
They were Shield 9. Now they're Shield 5.
Thanks.
Is it comedy?
Thought we were in 9.
I changed it to 5.
The nice thing... You can watch it over and over and over.
Yeah. Still don't know what's going on.
You're not supposed to. It's there's that would be exposition. Here,
did you
wait
watch Louis C.K.'s new show?
No. Is it good?
Phenomenal. He did it again. He started a whole new series. $5. Download it. Do what you want.
It's a series, though, this time. It's not a comedy show. It's a series.
It's a series, and it's an unbelievable cast. It's a drama with comedy moments in it. Alan Alda is having the time of his life.
It's called Horace and Pet?
Pete.
Pete. Oh, I could cut off the E. and where do we get it? Do we have to go to louisck.net?
Louis CK. Yeah.
Yeah, we do. Horace and Pete's. Includes one video episode, latest release. Oh, man, is he smart.
Oh.
What, you know what? The new thing. That's the new thing. I just declared it. Bypassing Netflix and going straight to the viewers.
Yep.
How much?
And it is $5.
For one episode?
For one show is actually a lot.
That's an awful lot.
You can get $1.99 or $2.99, but it's worth it.
I don't get the series. Is there no series?
Not yet. He just dropped one episode.
Oh, man, you have to be a fan to buy that for $5.
I know, but I am, and it's good. So it's Steve Buscemi, Edie Falco, Alan Alda,
what?
Jessica Lange, Rebecca Hall.
Okay, it's $5. And you get 67 minutes. It's not like a 15 seconds.
It says here, it's like a Eugene O'Neill. This is the New York, this is Hollywood Reporter. It starts as a Eugene O'Neill play about two brothers running a struggling joint, transitions into a David Mamet drama about political correctness and generational definitions of masculinity, becomes a Norman Lear sitcom about contemporary political attitudes, pivots into a Chekhov saga about an underestimated woman reclaiming her birth rate, and settles into a Mike Leigh kitchen sink dramedy about painful blue-collar family revelations.
I want it.
It is.
This is not Kickstarter. This is on Louis' site.
This is on Louis' site.
It says, buy now. To buy this thing, do this. Enter your email. We will not bother you. Choose below to pay with PayPal, Amazon, Dwolla, or BitPay. 3, watch the show, download the show, ignore the show, whatever you want. After that, you never, ever have to hear from me again unless you want to. And then there's a checkbox that says, yes, I'd like to receive further emails about Louis C.K. things. No, leave me alone forever, you
yes.
No, leave me alone forever, you fat idiot, is the other choice.
Plus, when I forgot my password, it said, you know, even the password thing is funny.
I am amazed.
What's amazing, too, Leo, is that there are current lines in here that show that it must have been taped like 2 days before.
Do you think he paid the other actors?
Well, I was talking to a friend of mine who really knows TV today, and he said, you know, I see got Alan Alda. He said, yeah, it's Louis C.K.
Right.
Louis C.K. is the Woody Allen of our time.
Wow.
He's the auteur who does amazing things, and you watch whatever the heck he does. And
so he has to at least pay them scale.
Yeah, I don't know. Can you do a...
Maybe because it's the internet, you could like say, well, it's experimental video. No, yeah. I think not. I think he has to pay him scale.
But even so...
And you know what? You might work for scale on something like this just to see.
Oh, God, you would. Oh, no. These people absolutely would. That's all they'd get.
Hang out with Louis.
But I'm telling you, Buscemi and Alda and Edie Falco, who are the main leads in here. And plus it's... what's Stephen Wright?
Man.
At the end of the bar where he should be.
Yeah. I can imagine. I'd like to go to a bar where Stephen Wright's sitting at the end, just making comments. You can download it. They have three sizes, 1080p, 720p, 480p. Or you can stream it on your computer or your phone. I'm going to download it, though.
It's an hour or seven.
Yeah, no, it's a big thing. It's 1.7 gig in high def. I probably shouldn't download it right now.
Also,
during the show, but Nick, that's cool. All right, we gotta wrap this up. Let me just do a couple of quick.
I wanted to ask you about some of the two Facebook things in here.
Twitter. We talked about Twitter on Sunday, and Jason Calacanis was convinced it was in play. He says, "I said, who's going to buy it? Is it investment companies trying to turn it and make a quick buck?" Or is it a company like Google that says it'll synergize with their business? He says it's both. He implied that he knew that of at least one offer. And then, of course, the very next day, there was Twitter stock soared because Business Insider published a story saying Mark Andreessen and Silver Lake considered buying it.
Best thing in the world, Mark Andreessen.
That was a Jessica Lesson story. I should give Jessica credit. Yeah,
but Andreessen knows Twitter, understands Twitter, loves Twitter. For him to own Twitter would be phenomenal. Just to see what he'd do with it.
Oh, I'd love it.
Great.
But apparently they did not, in fact, decided not to. She says, I don't know if anything is active, and a spokesperson for Andreessen Horowitz and Silver Lake declined to comment. But she thought it might be a pipe deal. Private investors buy a piece of a public stock via newly issued shares. I don't think Twitter's, that's usually done to raise funds quick. Twitter's not short on funds. They're actually doing quite well, even though their stock is not doing well. In fact, one of the stories going around is that people are very careful right now about Twitter because they don't want it to look like a hostile takeover, even though Twitter's failing stock price makes that possible.
Right.
Apple? We thought, Calacanis mentioned Disney. A media company like Disney would probably be a logical buyer.
I don't know.
Twitter surges on another stock. Stock surges.
What's the market cap now?
It's not cheap, but it's not super expensive. It was around 20 or 30 billion. Let me just real quickly check here. TWTR, right?
10.98 billion.
Oh, not much. $11 billion. Oh. You got $11 billion? Wait, let me check.
Lisa.
What can we put together?
Get the checkbook.
We can heavily leverage it. I got a couple hundred bucks here. I would like Mark Andreessen. Certainly, there's nobody who better understands the power of Twitter. He invented the tweet storm.
Exactly. He turned Skype, didn't he?
Andreessen Horowitz owned Skype?
With Silver Lake, didn't they?
Maybe. Microsoft just bought one of our... And I'm sorry Gina's not here because I'm sure she's a SwiftKey fan. SwiftKey, which is the best Android keyboard, third-party keyboard, is also available on iOS. Microsoft has, in fact, just started offering on iOS a similar keyboard they call their Flow. Is it Flow Word Flow? And so they've acquired... I hope they don't hurt it. Do you use SwiftKey? Do you know about SwiftKey?
Nope. I like a plain old keyboard.
Actually,
I can't do that.
The Google keyboard does that thing.
I know, and I can't stand it. I don't do that.
I love it. And the Google keyboard now is in many ways almost as good as SwiftKey. The thing that makes SwiftKey special is it looks at all your other writings with your permission and improves its predictions based on your Facebooks, your tweets, your emails.
See, I don't even use predictions because then I've got to stop typing and look at the prediction and say yes or no and hit that. And I just keep typing and making mistakes.
The other thing SwiftKey does that's really cool is it tells you how many miles you flowed. Let me see if I think I have SwiftKey on this. This is the Nexus 6P. I might be using the Google keyboard has gotten pretty darn good. Let me, I forgot how to use Android. It's been so long. There you go. That's the video of SwiftKey. See, I like that flow. They didn't invent it. Swipe invented it, but then they swiped it from Swipe.
Is Swipe still around?
Yeah. SWYPE. Where's my Swift key? There it is. I have the beta. That's right. So I am 7% more efficient. I saved 198 taps. They've predicted 11 words. It gives you graphs. And it tells you what words you type a lot, the top emoji you've used, the size of your vocabulary. I have flowed 131 words for 11.28 meters. I must have just installed it on this phone because it's not. But see, that kind of stats really people love. I don't know if it's valuable, but they love it. Speaking of acquisitions, Zag, which is a nice smartphone battery case manufacturer, has purchased Mophi, which is a very nice battery case.
Zag also makes good keyboards.
Oh, yeah, the Zag levels. Keyboard, yeah.
Yeah.
$100 million. Oh, I didn't mention. No one knows what SwiftKey went for, but the thinking is Microsoft paid $250 million for it. $250 million. Not bad. Nice work if you can get it. I think that's all of our big stories.
The two Facebook things. I'm sure you're.
Oh yes, you were going to do those. Yes.
So the one story is that they're using qualitative feedback to change the news feed based on surveys with people who say...
Instead of just doing it automatically, which they've been doing up to now, right?
But they've obviously used some behavior.
Yeah. They're monitoring you.
Judge that. But now they've also
now
asked
asking
people,
you.
Please tell us. Right. Well, they've asked a panel. Please tell us what you want to see in your feed and don't want to see in your feed. And they're learning whatever lessons they learn from that. And so they try to go to quality, which is kind of interesting. Well, you know, do you want this in your feed? Do you want it on the top? What would you do with this? So I found that interesting. Then also they announced audience optimization for publishers.
Ooh, what does that mean?
So I thought it might interest you. That's why I brought it up.
Yeah, so that... Well, I've known this for a while, that you can tell Facebook... Who was it? Oh, it was actually, again, Jason Calacanis. He tells me a lot of things I don't know. I'm slumping. You don't have to adjust the camera. running over to move the camera. Maybe I'm not slumping. I'll sit up even higher. There we go. He told me that that the really sharp people who are using Facebook will work with Facebook to target their articles to, let's say, he said what you could do with Twit is have the Twit newsletter. I don't do any of this. In fact, I promised on the show I would never do this when he said it. He said, you should be doing this. It'd improve your... I said, I promise I will never do this. But we could take the newsletter, which we have, twit.tv/newsletter. We could take that information and then feed it to Facebook. Here's all the people who subscribe. And then they would generate things like a demographic set based on that of like-minded people who don't watch Twit. And then I could make sure that the Twit video for a fee gets pushed to those people because indications are they would like it because these people like it. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
It's basically advertising. They also say if you use tags, we can do some of this, you know, for free. But I think really this is an open to having the conversation of, well, you really want this to work. What we need to do is work closely together. But they say you could use tags. I think any signal that you give Facebook, they're happy to get, right?
So, yeah.
See, I think the qualitative feedback is the same thing. They love data, just more data. One thing I know is that you don't really want to ask people what they like because they lie. They lie worse than a Trump voter in Iowa. A Trump non-voter in Iowa. When you ask people what kind of TV they watch, they all say PBS. But nobody really watches it. They're always trying to impress yep. the survey taker. Oh, yes. I watch a lot of Downton Abbey.
Yeah, I noticed when I was at People Magazine, we did cover tests. You know, you put Diane Sawyer gives you the news or Brooke Shields in a bikini. Yeah. Oh, no. I'm going to buy Diane Sawyer.
Yeah. Yes, the best cover test is to put, which a lot of companies now do, is put both covers on the actual newsstand.
Yeah.
And then see which one sells. Because people don't lie with their dollars. They lie with their tongues.
Yep.
According to CNBC, the IRS is experiencing computer failure across several systems. Just thought you'd like to know.
A little Schadenfreude there.
Dr. Mom put that in the chat room and said, tell Jeff there is a God.
and she pays taxes.
Yeah, apparently. YouTube is also doing original content. The first is going to appear for people who are Red subscribers next week. It's called A Trip to Unicorn Island. Tell me what kind of audience YouTube is trying to get here. From the team at Astronauts Wanted, this feature-length movie gives fans an extraordinary look inside the life and journey of Lily Singh as she embarks on a challenging 26-city global tour where she has to remember to practice what she preaches. Happiness is the only thing worth fighting for. Is Lily Singh a real person?
I don't know.
Well, yes, as a matter of fact, she's a real person. She's a YouTube star.
Oh, of course. Yeah, of course. Yeah, sorry.
How about this one? Dance Cap. Camp. Not Cap. Camp. Dance Camp. This feature film from Awesomeness TV weaves an amazing story of unlikely friendships, unleashing passions, discovering yourself through the power of dance. Awesomeness TV. YouTube partner. Laser Team. In this feature-length action comedy from Rooster Teeth and Full Screen Films, four small-town losers stumble upon an alien ship carrying mysterious cargo, leading to a battle to save Earth from an all-powerful enemy. And finally, here we go. Go ahead, play the audio on this. Oh, man, I don't want to see this.
Days, an alien warrior will arrive to do battle with whoever is wearing this suit to the death.
How do we get these things off?
Oh, Lord.
It's meant to work as a unit.
Who's this douchebag?
I'm the champion of Earth.
You look like the champion of swim team.
My dad may not be very strong or brave, but he is really good at...
I love you too, sweetie.
No matter what comes your way, I will block it.
That's not my fault. I didn't know we were going up.
Well, you can tell what audience they're aiming
at. It's Nick for Boys, yeah.
Yeah. And finally... Scare PewDiePie. In this reality adventure series from the creator and executive producer of The Walking Dead at Skybound Entertainment and Maker Studios, experience thrills, chills, and laughter as PewDiePie encounters terrifying situations inspired by his favorite video games. That's going to be a hit, huge hit, because it's PewDiePie. And they're simulating computer games.
Oh, God.
It's not for us, Jeff.
No, it's not. Not at all.
I just think the world is conspiring to make me feel old.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Vice announced its channel.
Yeah.
It's old-time TV channel today.
Yeah.
Viceland. Viceland. Spike Jones and Eddie Moretti as co-presidents. And the first lineup, I just thought I'd share this with you.
Yeah.
Balls Deep.
Okay.
Gaycation. Noisy. Flophouse.
Oh, Lord.
F-word, spelled out. That's Delicious. And Weediquette.
What are the odds that they will have young women bouncing on trampolines in at least one of those shows?
I know.
I'm glad Spike is back, baby. Viceland. Sure. Actually, I just saw people bouncing on a trampoline in the trailer. Okay, so I wasn't wrong.
No, really?
All right. Let's take a break and come back with our tips and tools and numbers of the week. We already got Gina's tips, so it's up to you and me to keep the troops entertained. But first, a word from FreshBooks. Oh, I love FreshBooks. If you're a freelancer, you do your own invoices, maybe you're a small business. I think I can read your mind. You don't really love that time of the month, right? That's my time of the month. I have to sit down and get all the expenses out of the shoebox and add them all up. And I have to figure out, you know, how many hours I worked on every project. Then I have to create an invoice and send it. And by the time you get to the end of that, you're going, let me get back to the thing I love, the reason I created my business. FreshBooks is going to make it so simple, so easy. It's better than having an accounting manager. It's the best stuff. First of all, there's the FreshBooks app, which keeps track of your expenses. You just take a picture of them and then gets it right into the invoice. The invoices look super. They're very easy. In fact, really, you can almost automatically create the invoice with a push of a button. And then the nice thing is that invoice goes out and you get paid faster, on average 5 days faster, because it's easy for your client. They just push a pay button and they can pay online. Time and hours, no problem. Use the app. It automatically keeps track of it and then puts it into your invoice. Plus, if you are in a business where you go to people's houses, their new FreshBooks app lets you create an estimate on your iPhone, show it to your client, get approval, do the work, show the invoice to the client, and then you stick their new EMV-capable card reader in your phone. They can swipe the stripe or dip the chip and pay you on the spot. You're going to love it. This redesigned iPhone app is amazing. Send an estimate right after the handshake. Send an invoice in seconds right from your phone. This is how your customers want to work with you. You could track all your billable time anywhere you are. You could track expenses with your iPhone camera. And, of course, if you have any questions, support is always free and always there. The support rock stars at FreshBooks go above and beyond to help you out. I love FreshBooks. I used it for years. I want you to use it. For 30 days free. Go to FreshBooks.com/twig. FreshBooks, FreshBooks.com/twig. As Gardner in our chat room says, FreshBooks equals awesome. Just do me a favor, just so that Jeff gets credit. Put this week in Google in the how did you hear about us field on that form there. That way they'll know. FreshBooks.com/twig for your 30-day free trial. Jeff Jarvis, your number of the week.
So Bloomberg Gadfly, which is a service I didn't know existed. It's very good.
It's well named. What is it?
It is. It's financial stuff. And they do some really interesting analyses using data visualizations.
Mm.
And because both Amazon and Alphabet are reporting more details of their companies, they put them together and saw what we saw, which I found really interesting. So some of the obvious we know is revenue. On Amazon, the retail revenue is $99 billion, which, of course, cheats because that includes the merchandise. AWS is $7.8 billion revenue.
That's actually Google, huge, even though it looks dwarfed by the retail sales.
Exactly.
It's a good business.
Google, $74.5 billion, and the other bets are 0.5.
Right.
Half a billion. Profit.
Whoa.
Amazon, of course, keeps profit as tiny as it can to not get, as somebody I know said in an article, to not get Wall Street addicted to that crack. So it's $2.7 billion profit on retail and $1.9 billion profit on AWS. So they let that
nice
go ahead.
Nice profit
and
margin. Yeah.
Google, $23 billion profit. And of course, as we said earlier on the show, negative $3.6 billion on the other bets. Operating margin, 3% on retail for Amazon, 24% for AWS at Amazon, 31% for Google. Free cash flow, CapEx, what else was there? Total debt. $17.5 billion at Amazon and $5.2 billion at Google. One wonders why Google even has debt, but that's the way they operate.
Hmm.
So I just found those somewhat interesting now that we can know a little bit more about the companies.
Yeah. This is a nice page.
Gadfly is very good, yeah.
It's Bloomberg.com/Gadfly.
Mm-hmm. They're doing really neat stuff at Bloomberg Media.
It's kind of a funny name because it isn't a gadfly kind of a dilettante.
Flitty.
Kind of
yeah, I know. I don't know why it is that.
Yeah.
But they have neat analyses.
Love it.
Oh, Amazon's bookish demeanor.
Yeah. And are you considered, I know as a number, it's the number $6,006.13.
Yes.
And now I feel punked by this. So I thought this was a great story. You remember in September, a fella named Sanmay Ved bought Google.com. He had gone to the new Google domains and just as a lark said, hey, I wonder if I could buy Google.com. And to his surprise, got it. We reported that when it happened, and it got turned back on. Now we find out that, in fact, Google, instead of going through the lengthy ICANN process of getting their name back, just said, hey, Sanmay, can we give you some money? How about let's give you a Google dollars? That's G-O-O-G-L-E or 6006.13. Get it? And leet? Somebody pointed out that's also booby, but that's Google or booby. Either way. Then Sanmay said, no, but I got a better deal for you. I'll give it to charity if you double it. And they did. $12,012.26. I thought this was really good. This was a blog post, and this came on Thursday, and it came from the bounty. Bug Bounty Program. Ved donated it to the Art of Living India Foundation, a humanitarian and educational NGO. But what they told me on a tweet on Sunday is, oh, did you know Ved used to work at Google? You've been punked. The whole thing is a PR ploy. I don't know if that's true or not.
Really?
I know.
He's a student now.
Yeah. He's studying at Babson College. He was an accountant for 5 years. An account strategist at Google from 2007 to 2012.
I don't see how that presumes you've been punked.
Okay, good. You're the hard-nosed journalism professor.
No, I'm an optimist. I'm an optimist. Have a little faith in me.
Okay, I want you to do this as a case study for your students. Mm-hmm. What do they think?
I don't know.
Speaking of case studies, you saw, kind of very sad that The Intercept had to fire...
Yep.
A reporter and retract many of his stories because he fabricated them.
made up quotes, people he didn't talk to. Yep. Bad apples.
You know, it happens everywhere. The New York Times had the same problem, right?
But I saw a press release past my email that Jason Blair, who was the New York Times case, was commenting on the Intercept case.
Oh, please.
But I really cared, yeah.
You know, when you're going to fabricate a source. Actually, this guy at the Intercept had probably learned a little from Jason because he faked emails. He created a fake email account. He sent himself the quotes so he could say, no, see, I have the email right here. I mean, he was pretty sophisticated in his subterfuge.
You're going to go to all that effort.
Well, it's the problem with it. It's a smoking gun now.
Yeah.
You know, that's so the next guy won't do that.
just
a word of warning to whoever hires the next guy. I just want to give you, I don't have a product. I do want to give you an update on the Tesla because it was last week, I think, or maybe 2 weeks ago. I mentioned that I was having difficulty working with Tesla and getting a date. And then the next day I got a call from somebody very nice at Tesla who said, oh, I heard the podcast. That's when I hang my head in shame.
And no car for you, mister.
No, he didn't do what they did to Stuart Alsop. Stuart Alsop was a well-known columnist, tech guy.
I think if Elon had seen the podcast, he may not have a car now.
Yeah. Apparently, Alsop wrote a stinging blog piece or a Medium piece on how he, as a Model X customer, because he had pre-ordered one, went to the Model X event, had to wait 2 hours for Elon to take the stage, and and after 3 hours, it ended up not seeing a hide or hair of a Model X, and he went away disappointed, and he wrote a note on Medium in public to Elon saying this is terrible, and Elon apparently just canceled his order. I love you, Elon. You're great. I'm excited. I can't wait. In fact,
I love you in my car, Elon.
Well, here's the funny thing. I just got a date, and it's February or March
of
like next month.
No, you're kidding me.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I thank you. And, you know, once I understood that I had the wrong expectations. I had the expectation it was like going to a car dealer and buying a car. And then they say, yeah, you'll have your car in it. But this is a brand new vehicle nobody's ever made. They're just now ramping up. They're making apparently 238 cars a week. It's not, you know, but for whatever reason, I don't think I'm jumping the line. I hope I'm not because I don't like to do that. But my car,
what color did you order?
I ended up getting a titanium.
Mm-hmm.
It's all right.
What interior?
A tan. So we talked about this because I really wanted a white, pearl white with a white inside because I'd seen videos of that. In fact, I think Elon's is that. And I thought that looks like a car from the future. And since I'm driving a car from the future, it should look like a car from the future.
And as Jason said earlier, it was a good stormtrooper look, right?
It does look a little bit like a stormtrooper. But my wife, wiser head prevailed. And you had the same reaction as my wife.
Oh, immediately.
It'll get dirty.
I used to eat salt bagels all the time. And my family just got enraged how there was salt in the car because I'd rip them up in the car. And
yeah. Well, I like poppy seed, which would be even worse for a white car. A little black specks everywhere. Anyway, I apologize. I'm very excited. Now I have to talk Lisa into letting me get it early because we were going to wait till September when my lease runs out. But don't you think I should have it sooner so that I can review it and talk about it?
Oh, yes, Leo, you should.
Thank you, Jeff. Lisa, I this is kind of what I said. I said, Lisa, I love you.
You can send me the Nature Box bribe later.
Do you think yes, exactly. Do you think it would be okay if we took delivery of this a little bit early? She said, what are you asking me for? You know you're going to do whatever you want. people aren't buying electric cars, and I think it's so cool. I got solar panels on the roof just to do that. 30 kilowatt hours a day we're generating, and it's so that then when I drive this car, I could say this car is powered by the sun almost directly, and is using no renewable resources except for maybe
on principle. I want one. Well, plus the only electric car I've driven was I test drove the i3, the BMW.
Yeah.
And you know, as I said,
made with
the time,
wind, you know.
Yes, exactly, and it goes like the wind.
Oh yeah, electric's amazing.
Electric's amazing because it's like a nuclear powered golf cart. You know, it's wonderful. It drives so differently.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited. I don't know yet.
Well, I'd be dying to it. Well, now what do you think about the Model 3?
So this is according to Jason Calacanis. This is like the eighth time I've quoted him in this show. Who is a friend of Elon Musk's and claims to be privy to Elon's strategic thinking. He also owns the number one Roadster, the Roadster model number one, also Model S. He says that really this has all been a journey to get to the Model 3.
Yes.
The consumer, $30,000 consumer grade electric car, because Elon's not in this for the money. He's in it to change the world. And the reason this came up is because we were talking about Apple's ambitions in autonomous vehicles and electric vehicles. And Jason's pretty sure Apple has serious designs on Tesla. He's just as sure that Elon does not want to sell because he's not in it for the money.
He's changing the world.
He's really in it more to change the world than to make the money. But he said maybe he wants to get to the Model 3. Maybe after the Model 3, the consumer-priced version of this, which he's been financing with these high expensive Model S and X, maybe when we get to the Model 3, he'll be considering selling it then. And Apple may well, you know, who knows? They may have a memo of understanding.
Well, by then, you may find similar cars from lots of companies.
Well, the Chevy Bolt is a $30,000, 200-mile range electric car. That's the key, by the way. That's the difference between Teslas and the Leaf and the Volt and all these is range.
Well, and to me, the real test is when an electric car can get as far as you can drive in a day, which is 400 or 500 miles.
Right.
300 miles even. Which I think the main Tesla does do, right?
Right.
Then it becomes practical. If I have to stop for 45 minutes in the middle of driving somewhere and find the damn place, then no.
Right.
Though even then, I still need, you know, it's in Tesla's interest. This is why he's open source things. The more charging stations there are in hotels and parking lots and everywhere, the better the market is.
Right. I could probably just turn my Audi in early.
What's the penalty?
I don't know. I should look. There's a penalty, but it can't. How much could it be? It's got to be less than having two leases at the same time.
What does Lisa drive?
She drives an Audi also. We like Audis. I really love the Audi, but we don't. We lease. The company leases it. So
I went to visit my parents, my father's 90th birthday on Saturday, which is very cool.
Happy birthday. Wow.
Yes, big deal. So my sister and I went down and I rented a car and I chose the Ford because I said, oh, good, I'm going to try Sync. Two things. One, I can't believe that they took out the aux plug.
So I really?
Plug in and play Hamilton.
A lot of cars don't have aux plugs. I don't have an aux plug in my Audi either. In fact, I don't even have a USB port. I have a proprietary connection with a 30-pin plug on the other end for your...
No,
out-of-date iPod. You can buy additional connectors, which I ended up doing. Yeah.
So then I said, okay, I'll...
Tesla doesn't have an aux plug either, by the way, but it does have four USB ports.
All right, and the standard USB ports.
Yeah.
So I then try to just do Bluetooth. That's okay. No, you have to have the Sync app. It'll only do Bluetooth in the Sync app. So fine, I download the Sync app onto my phone. And then, no, I've got to register with the VIN number and all this stuff.
No. It does standard Bluetooth.
I couldn't get it to do it. I couldn't figure out how to.
No, it totally does standard Bluetooth. Unless they really changed it. Because I had Ford Sync, you know, I had a Mustang for years.
I know that.
And you just pair it like you do any car. You search for the phone and it finds it.
It said not to.
Although they didn't have at the time a Bluetooth app, so I don't know.
I mean, somebody will tell me the answer, but the point was, I just wanted to try it out, and rental cars are a huge way to try out new products.
Right.
So, because I'm debating right now.
You still haven't decided.
Oh, God, no.
Are you thinking electric?
No, it just isn't practical.
You're going to go hybrid, right?
I would love to, but that's... The car that would seem to have everything I want is that Lincoln, but I'm just too young to drive Lincoln.
You and I have that same prejudice. That's for old people. Jeff, we're the old people we were thinking of.
The Audi Q3 was the one I was going
for. Oh, that's nice.
All of Audi's problems, and they won't give me a straight answer as to... I met an Audi, a big Audi.
You're looking for the Android Auto.
Yeah, and I said... I was at an Instagram lunch at the DLD conference in Munich. I meet a big Audi executive, and I immediately said, I have a bone to pick with you.
Oh,
and you
good.
Can imagine what he was fearing.
Yeah.
I said, no. It's just Android Auto.
No, he was thrilled not to hear that.
Yeah.
So I
can't get a straight answer about that. And so then I'm considering the Lexus equivalent, the NX, is a new small version, and it's really nice.
Mm.
But Toyota refuses to go, thinks they can do a better user interface.
Oh, they're all wrong when they say that. They're wrong.
Way wrong.
Go with CarPlay or Android Auto. So Tesla did announce that they're going to allow me to, with my Android device, stream some
mirror.
That's the word. The display of an app onto the big screen.
It made giant, or at least
I don't know. You know what? I'll get back to you after I get my X, and you can maybe think about it.
You know, Leo, you could just transfer your lease from your Audi over to Jeff.
You want an Audi, Jeff?
Not that one. No.
No. It's kind of like a Lincoln made in Germany. Jeff Jarvis is a professor of journalism at CUNY, the City University of New York. He is author of so many great books. He blogs at buzzmachine.com, writes regularly at Medium. His latest book, Geeks Bearing Gifts, is about the news industry. He's also written What Would Google Do?, Public Parts. Gutenberg the Geek is an Amazon single. There's lots of stuff out there. Just search for Jeff Jarvis. And you will find him. We thank Gina Trapani for showing up. It's nice
always
to see her.
Love her.
Miss her. Her website, she was doing a blog, but, you know, I didn't ask her. I have a feeling she's not that active doing the blog. So thinkup.com or makerbase.co. Thank you for joining us. We'll see you next time every Wednesday, 1:30 p.m. Pacific, 4:30 Eastern. 2130 UTC. For This Week in Google. Bye-bye.